Hi, this is Elizabeth Grayson, Amanda from Highlander, and you are listening to the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans. This is Kevin, one of your hosts, and you are in for a treat. This is the final episode of Fandom Podcast Network's Highlander Fandom Flashback. We got a very special guest for you. We're really excited to share this with you, and we have a special announcement at the end of the show. Before we go on, though, I'd like to introduce my co-host here. Kyle, how are you? Are you excited?
My excitement levels are off the scale. I have to say for our listeners out there, this is a banner day for us. This is something very special. The words kind of escape me at the moment, but when Kevin and I started this up, this is kind of the events we were hoping for and the moments that we're about to have here. This is what the Fandom Podcast Network is about, and you guys are just in for an absolute treat.
You know, it's interesting. I had approached, as we said before, I approached Norman about doing a Highlander podcast, and you know, I had no idea we would come to this point in our podcasting. But Norman, how are you doing? Thank you for being on the show again, and it's a pleasure to have you co-hosting this Highlander Fandom Flashback.
Thank you. It's a great surprise that we have for everyone that has joined us on this journey for the Fandom Flashback. As you know, Highlander is very dear to my heart, and I can't say that more seriously. But when I say seriously, it means it's so deeply personal because it has influenced so much of my life. Which is why I want to do more than one of these shows, because there is just so much of that particular fandom to dive into. And I have to agree with Kyle. This is just one of those moments that this is why we do podcasting. There is a handful of very high and special moments that you can count in one hand, saying like, this is the reason why I want to do this. This is the reason why this, as a not just a hobby, but as a personal journey, means so much to me. And if you would indulge me for a second, Kevin, I'd like to read a little bit of a soft introduction to the guest that we have. I'm going to switch out all of the names in this paragraph with pronouns so that we can build up a little bit of excitement. How does that sound?
That sounds great. I think you'd be the perfect person to introduce our guest.
Okay, so here we go. As a young girl, she found herself often escaping into the world of make-believe. Her eccentric grandmother, a would-be witch who read palms and invented wild stories about good fairies who battled an army of evil spiders in her attic, gave her the gift of imagination, a gift she has always treasured. Years later, she discovered the craft of acting to channel her vivid imagination, and most notably as a very special character in the fantasy series Highlander. She spends her time between Europe and America and happily juggles the role of mother, business owner, filmmaker, and author. She lives with her husband, her 10-year-old daughter, three dogs, and an attic full of fairies. Shay Lily is her debut novel, and we cannot be more excited to bring you the information that is going to be dropped on you very soon.
Well said, my friend. And of course, fans, we are talking about Amanda herself, Elizabeth Grayson. She sat down for a phone interview, and she was so wonderful. She's promoting her book, and we want to make sure that you guys check out her new book, Shalili. And please enjoy this interview. She was wonderful, and we look forward to talking to her again. I'd like to thank all the Highlander fans out there for listening. Enjoy. Here is Elizabeth Grayson. Hello, Highlander fans. Welcome back to another episode of Highlander Fandom Flashback here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We are really excited today. We have a very, very special guest. Before I introduce our special guest, I would like to introduce my co-host, Kyle. How are you?
I am doing very well, Kevin, and I can't say how excited I am right now. It is an absolute honor for this to have this guest here.
And Norman, welcome back, man, fellow Highlander expert. How you doing?
I'm doing great. This has been the best journey covering Highlander for all these different episodes. And for our fans in particular, this is going to be the crown jewel of this entire fandom flashback.
Well said.
That's
well
so
said.
Nice.
So, from a small town in Arkansas to Miss Arkansas in 1981 and Miss America in 1982, to the scene and heart-stealing immortal Amanda in Highlander for 6 years, and the lead in Highlander the Raven for 1 year, and now producer, director, entrepreneur, and creator of Flapper Films and Flapper Print, you have had the opportunity and have reinvented yourself a new and exciting chapter for both your life and your career. Welcome, Elizabeth Grayson. How are you?
Oh, wow. Thank you for that. I'm doing quite well. Thank you for having me on your podcast. It's very exciting. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You have a new book coming out, and we're going to get into that in just a moment. We're really excited about that. But I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Flapper Films and Flapper Press and how you got into that. It's great to see this other side of you that a lot of Highlander fans don't know. And please tell us the origin of this.
Wow. You know, I had a kid sort of late in my adult life. At the age of 44, I had gave birth to a daughter. And that process sort of slowed me down a bit. And I had a lot of time to think about what I wanted to do sort of with the rest of my life. And I love acting. I love the actual craft of acting. But the process of getting jobs, as you can imagine, is pretty arduous, pretty difficult, very competitive. You have to have a lot of drive to do it and a lot of time. And I don't know. I just sort of thought, what could I do with what I have learned? And it was really important to me. I think it just happens when you have a kid. Maybe it just happens as you get older. But I wanted to do something that gave back to the world in some capacity. So I decided to create Flapper Films, and it happened sort of simultaneously with me meeting some amazing artists, dancers in particular. I'm not a dancer, but I met Hillary Thomas from the Lineage Dance Company, a modern dance company in Pasadena. They're a nonprofit that raises awareness for other charities, but they also, they sort of have a mission statement of just, you know, making the arts available to all. And we started this collaboration, very vibrant, very prolific, not of only the filming, kind of creating dances for camera based on their live performances, but creating original works as well through them. So I started this company called Flapper Films, and it was designed to create inspiring, educational, informational films for multi-generational women. And I do have some narrative scripts in the works that I'm really pursuing, but I'm really interested in the educational market because I was so influenced by films, art films, when I was in middle school, junior high school, and I'm really drawn to creating work that can affect young people in that age range. I'm sort of stuck in that age range with young adult novels, and I'm sort of really drawn to that phase of life when so much is possible, so much is happening, it's so difficult. I really want to create content that is available to that demographic.
That's fantastic. That is great. And that leads us into your new book, which is out right now in ebook form. And yes. It's called Shalili. And please give us a synopsis of it and, you know, and then kind of get into what inspired you to do this.
Wow. I have a really great friend who writes romance novels, and she's very steeped in romance, that genre in general. Making films, you have to write. I write my own scripts. So it was sort of necessary for me to learn the genre. I thought it would be romance, but I read a lot of books, and she really gave me some great advice, and I couldn't connect with it in the way. I couldn't write romance novels. I knew that. But I love fantasy. I mean, from Highlander, from my history with my fantastic grandmother, who was sort of this would-be witch who read poems and created, you know, I lived in fantasy always as a child, and all those things on Highlander. I'm very familiar with genre. I like reading it. I love Lord of the Rings. All that was in high school. It's just a genre I really love. And I read this, I just happened to read an article in Scientific American on Mount Parnassus in Delphi and this ethylene gas. The whole article was about this gas that emits from these fissures in Mount Parnassus in Greece, in Delphi, and how possibly the thrust of the article was that possibly this gas is what influenced the Kim up and sent these young women called Pythia, or the oracles, into these mad trances where they would literally bark like dogs and utter unintelligible prophecies that were interpreted by the priests, manipulated to whatever needed to happen at the time. So that started this idea, and I thought, oh, okay, oracles, And I started there, and I honestly can't tell you when I decided that my character, Pippa, the book is called Shillelagh, I should have said that first. The book is called Shillelagh, and it's about a mystic in archaic Greece, in the time of the oracles in Delphi. She's 16 years old, she desperately wants to be an oracle. She really has mystical gifts. She has a lot of gifts, and she's led on this adventure that she never thought was going to happen, and she travels through a portal to a parallel dimension called the Paradigm, which is a land full of mythical creatures and talking animals and these pale ones who basically control that world. And the problem with this is that Pippa goes through the portal to the Paradigm to bring back a warrior, basically to rescue this warrior named Ixion, and bring him back to Earth before love is annihilated from the cosmos. The only problem is that when she travels through the portal, she's transformed into this creature of legend, a butterfly girl called the Shillelagh. And it's pretty big. It's epic, but not on the proportion of like Lord of the Rings, but there are a lot of constructs I had to come up with to create this world.
What a fascinating and wonderful original story. I mean, wow. I got a question for you. I think we have daughters around the same age. My daughter's 10. Is this a book that you think that she would like? And was your daughter an inspiration for this?
You know, it's a little bit older than 10. I'm thinking it's more 12 and up.
Gotcha.
Because there's a lot of darkness in there. There's a predator who sort of preys on the heroine, preys on Pippa. It's a bit of a dark idea, and it's interesting talking to my daughter, who's 10 as well, about the book, and she wants to read it, and I'm sort of explaining to her and her friends, I'm actually going to use a lot of her friends for free publication, free publicity. They're going, I'm going to do the cover of the book on, put the cover of the book on t-shirts so they can wear them around the summer.
Very smart.
Some of her friends are a bit more sophisticated readers and are used to reading stories like this. My daughter's not really there yet, so I don't know. We'll see how we go. I think it's more 12 and up.
Gotcha.
Because it deals with, it's burgeoning femininity and this whole idea of a bit of an attraction to the male character, all these ideas that are a little bit older.
Very, very cool, Elizabeth. This is Kyle. I had a question for you. How did you find the writing process for you, especially compared to going through the process of acting? What was the differences for you in that?
I think coming at this as an actor, it's helpful. I'm used to creating in a different direction, that the words are on the page and I have to bring a character to life from the page. So it's sort of a reverse order. But I think being an actor really informs character development. I write pretty extensive character outlines before I begin writing. So I sort of know how they will talk and how they'll act, what their, what their archetype is, who they are in that structure. It was very helpful to me, I think. And I also just think in pictures. I'm really a visual person. I'm a painter, a mixed media artist, and a filmmaker, obviously. So I don't know. I think it all informs all of it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. No, it makes perfect sense. I'm sorry, Kyle. We're kind of like rotating hosts here. So we just
want to
make sure that you know who's talking. This is Norm.
Thank you, Norm.
Elizabeth, because you were from a small town in Arkansas and because you had this incredible life experience, do you feel that this is the right time for you, or has been the right time for you, to make this choice as an artist and as a creative to say, you know what, I am ready to move forward with this much larger part of my career? Because if this book does as well as we all think it will, do you look down the line and say, like, I would like to create a series of this, or possibly even go into animation or even into audiobooks or different parts of the market? Are you looking that far ahead, or are you just taking it one step at a time?
Sort of one step at a time, but I like what you said. That all sounds fabulous. I will probably do an audiobook, although when I think about the idea, I'm great friends. Roger Ballon was the composer for the Highlander series,
Oh, sure.
And Don Panessa was the supervising editor for Highlander and also Highlander the Raven, and they are great friends of mine and two of my very strong, valued collaborators on my film work. And Shillooly has a whole musical component to the storyline, which is based on Pythagorean philosophy and all this from archaic Greece, where, you know, music is like this language of the spheres type of idea. And my character, Sippa, has a an ability to sing. And when she sings, she influences the world around her. And I thought, well, how the hell am I going to do that for an audiobook? Because I don't sing like that. And I have to create this sort of overpowering, strong voice. Someone has to sing this beautiful melody that she can sing. So I don't know. I haven't told Roger about this, so he's going to be quite surprised. And I'm sure he's going to tell me, like, you're crazy, Elizabeth, but we'll see how it goes.
Was there ever a time when you found the process extremely difficult, like writer's block, loss of inspiration? And if so, how did you work through it?
I started writing this book when I was pregnant. And I put it on the shelf. I finished a draft of it, and then I put it on the shelf for years and kind of forgot about it, which is sort of my process in general. I think the longer I can leave something on the shelf, an idea in a file, or especially if I can get a first draft out of anything, if it's a script or a book or anything, that time it takes to let it sit where you can look at it again with fresh eyes. It, to me, it's very important because it takes on a, it's almost as if when I write, I kind of forget what I've written. And that's a good thing for me because I think you have to be fresh when you look at it. It's like you can never get a draft of a script or to a book to a friend and then have them read it again because, you know, you just fill in all the spaces that you knew were there before and all that. So I can't remember what your original question was because I'm rambling.
If you had writer's block and how you dealt with it.
Oh, no, not really. I usually have so many projects going at the same time, whether it's a film, a painting, writing something, that I keep cycling back around. If I hit a brick wall on any aspect of it, I will just set it aside and go to the next project. Unfortunately, it makes for a lot of projects on my plate, and some things, it takes a very long time to get them done. But I don't believe in writer's block. I think you just move on and create something else and come back around to it. It'll come to you. If it's meant to be, it'll come back to you.
No, I totally agree. And the thing is, the inspiration, I think, has always been there. And one of the things that I found most fascinating about your bio on Flapper Press was the line where it said, Elizabeth Grayson found herself often escaping into the world of make-believe. Her eccentric grandmother, a would-be witch who read palms and invented wild stories about good fairies who battled an army of evil spiders in her attic, gave her the gift of imagination, a gift she has always treasured. So that has been with you from early on. And
yeah,
how do you tap into that? How does that stay with you? And it seems like your grandmother has been hugely influential over your creative process throughout your career.
Oh, yeah. I it's amazing that I never realized it until I sort of had to figure out what influenced me and what, you know, as a creative person. Yeah, she was quite a character, and she really was one of the influences for my character development of Amanda on Highlander as well. She was a character, she was a person who would just come in and really stir it up and cause mischief. And oh my God, she was forced to be reckoned with most of the time. As a little girl, I mean, I was petrified most of the time. She was lovely, but she had this ability to scare the crap out of me with her stories, and most of them were made up. And I just believed that they were fairies, that they were looking at me. We would lie in bed and look up at the ceiling in her old house in Boonville, Arkansas. And she would look up at the light fixture and say, you see those screw holes in the light fixture? Those are actually peepholes for the fairies, and they're watching us now. Hmm. So I would go to sleep thinking fairies were watching me at night. So it's in my bones. It's in my blood. I can't get away from fantasy.
That's
at
awesome.
All. I don't know. It's awesome. It's just the way it is.
Well, okay. Well, I have to ask you, what was your first reaction when you locked your final edit and sent it to the publisher? Were you relieved, anxious, nervous?
I'm self-publishing. So I never really, I sent it out to a couple of agents at the encouragement of my editor, Jessica Gang. She was like, you need to send this out. And I sent it out, but I wanted it illustrated. So I had really talented fellow named Luca DiNapoli, who lives in France. He's Italian, obviously, but I wanted to do it my way. I'm a control freak, obviously. That's why I'm the director. That's why I'm doing all the self-publishing myself. But I don't know. I don't know. Basically, I'm a control freak. And Jessica
Don't apologize for that. That's great.
No, I know. I sent it out to a couple of people. I got a kind of a little bit of a bite, and nothing really came to fruition. And I'm all about let's finish what's on my plate. Let's get all these projects off the plate. I have a lot of them on the plate all the time. So, you know, time is short. Life is short. And so let's get on with it and get what I'm expressing out, and whether you like it or not, whatever. But I'm getting it out. I'm finishing it.
That's amazing. You talk about yourself being a control freak and self-publishing. You find in that aspect, did that make also your own worst critic? Are you finding yourself extra critical of yourself because you want to put out the best product you can?
I do. You know, I'm using BookBaby as my printer, I guess a form of publisher, but I'm using it from distribution and everything. But I'm learning so much. It's really frustrating to me. It's hard to trust other people with your work and to get it done. And I'm pretty exacting when it comes to what I want. And it's been hard, but I'm learning as I go. And I have a couple of other books, one that's finished already, that's a nonfiction book. You know, I'm learning as I go on how to do it. I'm sure there's, thank God for the internet. I mean, 10 years ago, I couldn't have been a filmmaker, nor could I have been a self-published author like this. I have control. I have the ability to get what I'm thinking out there pretty immediately. But that doesn't mean that it's not difficult and frustrating, and, you know, it's a steep learning curve. But I like challenges, so it's okay.
Well, since you have all of this, like, underneath your schedule, and you know how you want to parse this out to your audience, this is something I think that a lot of our Highlander listeners would be really interested in seeing. Do you have any live readings scheduled for Shillelagh at this time, or do you feel like you would like to perform? Because I think that our listeners would definitely want to see you do that.
Ooh, I like that idea. I haven't really thought that far ahead in that regard. I do want to do an audiobook, I think, but I will probably, more than likely, I will go back into the convention circuit. I feel pretty secure there. In the perfect world, I'd be working with Adrian Paul again. He has such a strong fan following. He's such a good friend. I feel safe with him. I believe that sort of circuit would provide enough security, and I would be comfortable enough to venture back out and promote my book through that avenue. I'm not quite sure yet. I'm working on it. As I said, I'm learning as I go on what I'm comfortable with doing. I've had really bad experience with a lot of stalkers, and I think that's a combo of working in a fantasy series, Playboy, being Miss America. I think it's all kind of fantasy-based, and it draws a certain type of person toward me, which I'm not comfortable with, and I'm really cautious about it. And in the end, I mean, I think I'll sell books. I don't know how many books I will sell, but it's more about me just finishing a project and getting it out there than, you know, just doing anything I can to sell the book. Obviously, I'll do everything I can, but I'm a little cautious, if that makes sense.
That's totally understandable. Sure.
Yeah, completely, completely. Have you planned ahead? How far have you planned ahead? Where do you see yourself 10 years from now, both as this creative force that you have now and as a mother? What would you like to see happen for you? What other, you know, plans do you have, or that things that you'd like to conquer?
Well, I would love to continue making films. I'm in the middle of shooting a feature-length adaptation of a live show that this dance company does called Ceiling in the Floor. And it'll be a feature film in the end, but really directed toward the educational market. I'd like to continue doing films. I have a feature film I'd love to do that's set in the Loire Valley in France. I would like to continue writing books, but I'd also like to live on a farm and do nothing. I'm ambitious, but I'm not ambitious to a fault anymore like I used to be when I was young and frisky and very myopic, and I'm not that I'm less ambitious, I'm just, I don't know, I don't need as much as attention as before, so we'll see. I just want to make things that feel true and good and creative and interesting to people.
Well, is that because, Elizabeth, is that because so much happened so quickly earlier in your career? Like you said, you know, you had the Miss America portion of your career, then you had the Highlander portion of your career and a lot of other things in between. But because all of that happened in a very short amount of time and very intensely, it didn't really give you a chance to kind of like settle in and see exactly where you can influence other parts of your life through your creativity. So now you have a chance to breathe, get some perspective, and now apply how much you've learned to the rest of your career. Do you think that that's happening at this stage?
I think that comes with age, and I think it comes with experience. I had a really fun time as an actor when I was younger. I to this day, I mean, Highlander was the best experience I could ever have experienced as an actor. I guess unless I'd been in a huge film and won Academy Awards and stuff like that. But for me, it was such a vital, exciting, fun time, not only working with Adrian and Peter Wingfield and Stan Kirsch and everyone associated with Highlander, getting to shoot in Canada and France, and oh my God, it was such a great experience. And I was, I was unattached to anything. So you just, that's that phase of your life where you just go for it. Things happen, things change. That will, that's gone. But I look to that. It still feels fresh to me. When I even talk about it, I feel that great joy that I felt during that process. I consider myself really lucky. This is a different phase. I mean, I'm a mom. I'm given the opportunity to not have to work like a crazy person and get out there and duke it out with all the actors in the world in my age range. Not that I don't want to act. I don't know if you guys saw Coherence. Have you guys seen that film? That sci-fi film called Coherence that
I did
with Jim. Oh, you guys have got to see it. It's totally, it sort of has a cult following in the sci-fi community. I do projects now for people who just sort of ask me to be involved in them. And if it's something I'm interested in, I'll do it. And this was a film with my pal James Burkett. And, I feel like doing all that, but you kind of have such a drive to be an actor, and especially now. The world of Hollywood is very, very different than it was when I was coming up in the ranks and working a lot. People don't make the same kind of money unless you're a big star. I mean, most people, even if you work a lot, you just barely make enough money to survive. And that does not interest me. And I don't know. I just don't have that drive. I do. I just got a new agent. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. I prefer being on the other side of the camera now. I prefer creating stories and having a bit more control over the creative process. The actors are not usually afforded that opportunity, so it's a different phase. It's all good.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting. I can tell how excited you are about the new stuff, and it's really, really, really fascinating to hear. We feel that we have to ask you some Highlander questions here.
Okay.
One of the things I'm curious about, because I wanted to ask you, how were you first approached for the role of Amanda? And is it true that you didn't really have to audition?
No, I didn't audition. I did. A couple of years before I did the first episode of Highlander, I was in a movie that we called The Death of the Incredible Hulk with Bill Bixby.
Oh, yeah. And, I remember that.
I don't know who. Yeah, it was my first sort of big, for me, it was a big TV job. It was one of my first big jobs. And Bill was amazing to work with, and Lou, and the whole thing was fantastic. And I think the producers and the casting people somehow, I'm not sure who I got the call from. It was not my agent. It was someone associated with The Death of the Incredible Hulk who called me and said, do you want to do this part in Paris, playing a jewel thief? She's immortal, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, of course I do. And that's how I got the part. And I flew to Paris, I think, the next week and did Lady and the Tiger, which was the first episode I was in. And it was a great experience. It was the first time to Paris, and I had a wonderful time. I loved meeting Adrian and working on the show. And then maybe it was a year after that, they said, oh, your character is really popular. We want to bring you back. And so that's sort of when it really began, that I was part of that franchise. And like I said, it was such a great experience.
So you came in on your first show with this Lady and the Tiger, and you got to meet Adrian, who I'm sure was as charming as Adrian always is.
Yes.
But you also got to meet someone from the Harry Potter lore. You actually worked with Jason Isaacs. How was that?
I did. He was great. He was so much fun. We didn't, neither one of us knew the show or the franchise. I think we both knew the film, but I mean, I love telling my daughter that because we're huge Harry Potter fans. And
that's why I asked.
Like, yes. I was like, yes, I worked with him. I mean, I sound like such an old fogey, but it's like, yeah, I worked with him. It's very funny. But he was terrific, and it's been great to watch him in that series. And, he's a great career, so good for him.
There's a little bit of a natural snarl and snarkiness and elitistness about him. But Please tell me that's just him being the actor.
Oh, totally. Yeah. He was charming to work with and funny. Most actors who can pull that kind of character off are extremely funny. They have a wry sense of humor. And I remember that very much about him. He's a good guy. All those Highlander guys are good guys. All of them are.
So if you had, okay, so this is kind of this is a two-part question. This is kind of like an Adrian-free question and an Adrian question. Because when you're saying, like, you know, you love working with Adrian, and I think, you know, we all know that, I think everyone loved working with Adrian. Who would be your next favorite person that you worked with aside from Adrian?
Oh, that's not cool, because there's plenty of good guys. I mean, between Jimmy Burns and Stan, I mean,
and Peter
Winkle, oh my God.
Yeah, no, I know, that's a loaded question.
It is. They were all gentlemen and so much fun. Oh my God. We had so much fun. I can't even tell you. I don't want to gloat and be gross, but I mean, we had such a good time. So many laughs, so much wine, so much food, so much just. And Adrian and I had such a compatible work ethic. I'm a bit of a workhorse and he is too. So like when we did the tango on the Eiffel Tower, I mean, that's us working on the weekends, trying to figure out how to do the tango and how to do that. And all these guys were kind of like that. It was just, it was a really magical experience to work with all those fellas. And even the women I usually worked with were villains or, you know, something like that. But I can't even tell you a bad experience I had. The Highlands of the Raven with Paul Johansson, he's a nice guy too. We just had a really odd circumstance that we had to work together. But I mean, I don't know. I think it was a charmed series for me in that regard.
I want to ask you about a project. In 2008, you, Peter Wingfield, Jim Burns got together to do a Highlander reunion. I want to give a brief synopsis of it so the listeners out there who do not know about it can find it and check it out. It's a 17-minute special film in 2008 where all of you reprise your roles from Highlander. It takes place about 10 years after the series. Filming took place at Wingfield's beach home, and you guys were volunteering your roles. And a plot evolved around the characters discussing Mythos' plans to get married and settle down with an immortal woman and her son. Can you tell us about that experience?
Well, it was just strange. We tried something, and it was sort of fledgling days of web series and, you know, all of these things, trying to figure out if there are ways to monetize it. Do these characters live on without Adrian, that type of thing. It was a great experience just because I got to work with Jimmy and Peter again. I'm not sure it worked. I don't, you know, it's not something I really necessarily like to watch, but it's always nice to try to keep characters alive. The problem is, of course, is that immortals should not age. We all are aging. Jimmy, of course, can age, but, you know, that's my vanity. I mean, it's just like, you know, you don't want to see yourself aging on screen in general. It's kind of frightening, but it was fun. It was fun to do, but I don't think it worked really. I can be frank.
Well, I think the interesting thing about that was, I think everyone forgave the fact that it was 10 years later because we loved your characters so much.
Yeah.
And the natural chemistry that you have with all of the, well, you know, with all of your fellow actors and co-actors. And I even think that it just showed all the way right down to everyone from behind the scenes. I'd love to ask you about some of the people that you were really, you know, just stayed connected with from your experience, because when we interviewed Bron from another show, some of the things that he really loved to talk about were the people that really didn't get a lot of notoriety. So who behind the scenes have you really kept in touch with? I know you said Don and you said Roger, but were people like just very genuinely good to you and you just wanted to stay in touch with them all this time?
Well, you know, I haven't talked to Stan in a while and nor have I spoken to Peter, but you know, they're the kind of, we have those kind of relationships because that was such a long period of time when we worked together. But it kind of has a family feel. It could be a distant relative feel, but it's there. It's not, you don't have to do a lot of catching up when you talk to any of these people. I don't really talk to Jim Burns that much, but, you know, we're Facebook friends and I'm seeing what he does. I think he's brilliant. He's an amazing musician. I just support him as an artist. Peter's doing his great, you know, career divergent sort of going, he's a doctor now.
As a doctor, I know, that's crazy.
It's fantastic. I mean, that's what he was in his last year of medical school when he decided he wanted to be an actor. I don't know why, but he did. And he's a great actor, so maybe that's why. But and Stan runs an acting school out in Hollywood, and Adrian's doing his thing. He's still chugging along and I don't know, you're all behind the scenes. I mean, I don't really, Peter Davis is still, you know, working, he's still owns Highlander. David Abramowitz, one of the writers, who's the main writer for the show, is a great friend of mine. He's a great support, such a talented man. I mean, we just all sort of keep in touch. Not incredibly frequent, but we do touch base. Some of the producers I'm still friends with. It's good. I mean, I think, I don't know if it's unique in the business, but there was something really special about that bond we all had working on that series.
Yeah, there's a
that
certain,
I'm
like,
forever grateful for.
There's a certain unspoken relationship, a certain trust that everyone still has about it, even if you haven't seen them in 10 years. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm curious too. What was it like for you transitioning from Highlander to going into The Raven? That a big change for you going into a project that you were the center around?
Oh, definitely. I actually left Hollywood between Highlander and The Raven, and I moved back to Arkansas, and I had a painting studio, and I was really deeply into figuring that out if I wanted to do that for the rest of my life, because I really love to paint. In the end, I decided painting is for me, not for anyone else, type of thing. If you want to buy my painting, or if I want to give it to you, great, but you know, it's not up for judgment like writing or acting is for me now as an art form. But at that time, I really did not want to act anymore. I was really not bored with it, but just kind of frustrated and not that happy. And I moved back to Arkansas, and I guess that was the year. I still did a couple of episodes of Highlander in Paris and Vancouver, but that was the year they did the, I don't know what they called it, but it's when they tried out all these different women for the role of the Raven, basically. That last season of Highlander, there were lots of female characters who came on, and they were trying to figure out who the spinoff was going to be about. So I didn't even consider that I would ever be in the running for that. Didn't really even know that it was happening. But then I got a call, and they said, we've thought about it, we've tried all these different avenues, and we want you to be the new lead of the series. Of course, I said yes, because I knew what was entailed, because it would involve Canada and France again, and the whole crew. And, you know, it was just a big steamrolled event, and it happened, and it happened very fast, fast and furious, a lot of hard work. I don't think we got it right. We did not get it right the first season. I think it got better as it went along, especially once we went to Paris and went more into a Highlander form with the flashbacks and all of that, the, you know, the core of what Highlander is about. But it was a great experience, even though it wasn't totally successful and didn't get that second season to get it, you know, its footing to make it into something fabulous. But it was different. You know, Amanda was like my grandmother. She was someone who would come in and stir it up, and it's hard to make that kind of character into the hero of a series. So they did the best they could. I think I've said this to somebody else in an interview, was that Nikita was on at the same time, and there was the Raven, but there were not a lot of female heroes as stars of a series. So it was sort of before its time. Now it's like a no-brainer. I think you could create that character. Oops, that's my Great Dane. Sorry. That's Boy Blue shouting the alarm. But now I think you could totally do that. You know, Wonder Woman's coming out and she's fabulous and all that. But at the time, I don't know. I think they were wrestling with how to write that series and who my character was supposed to be and how to make her heroic and, you know, so that she could take a head at the end of every episode. It was difficult, I think, for everyone to try to make it work. I had fun, but it was, you know, it didn't quite work. But I think if it was given the chance, we could have figured it out. I really do. There were too many good people involved for it not to be figured out.
Elizabeth, how do you feel about the Highlander franchise now? And what would you like to see from it in the future? TV show, movie, maybe more books?
Wow. I don't even know where it stands. I know they were trying to remake the first film again. I don't know where that is now. Obviously, I think it's a great franchise. It makes sense to breathe life into it again. I think it would be great to have female immortals. I think they should skew it to a younger demographic, more young adults, maybe. I don't know.
I love that idea. That's great.
Yeah, I think so. And I actually have the rights to create Highlander the Raven books. I don't know if it's the right thing for me to do. Peter gave me the permission to do it, and I love the idea of keeping Amanda alive. I would bring her more in. Bring her in as more of a mentor to probably a younger younger cast of characters.
Have you put a lot of thought into that? Like, what direction you have liked, you know, Amanda to go with the Highlander, the Raven?
I did. At one point, I created quite an extensive outline for a series of books, and then I started getting into filmmaking, and I sort of dropped it. But I contemplated if I want to go back in that direction again. I like the idea of her being a mentor to a younger girl, and the younger sort of generation taking off as immortals. I don't know.
That would be cool.
A pretty wild idea.
I absolutely love that idea. That's like the way that Adrian and Stan were, you know, like that's
Definitely. But I don't know if I'll write it or not. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I've got another idea. I'm writing about witches in Italy right now, so we'll see what happens.
A lot of creativity on your plate, Elizabeth, that's for sure. And I think the one thing that our listeners would also like to know is that there's a little something special that's happening in Burbank, California on May 21st. And I'd like to talk about that. You and Adrian will be together for a dinner and a signing of his new audiobook. And Shay Lilly is going to be there for its public debut. Is that correct?
I believe so. I believe it's a fundraiser for the Peace Fund, for his Peace Fund. Is that not right?
That's right. Yep. And then he'll be there promoting that, but you will be there also. So is there anything that our listeners would know about that or need to know about
that? Well, I don't know if it's been sold out. I have a feeling it's sold out already. I'm not sure, but I have not seen Adrian in about a year. You know, he's a family man now and I'm a family gal. So our lives are very busy, but I'm so looking forward to seeing him. I think it's a sort of a select group of people who've decided to have dinner with us, and he'll be signing his audiobook. I'll have copies of Shalili, and it should be a nice evening. I know some hardcore Highlander fans will be there, and that's always really such a great thing to experience because everyone is so supportive and so lovely. And those are not demons in the background. Can you hear that?
Very protective pets.
Yes, they are. You don't want to come to my house. There, I adopted a Great Dane and a Weimaraner around Christmas time, and they're puppies. They're like a year and 4 months. But of course, my Great Dane is the size of a small dragon. I say he's my dragon, so they're very loud and very rambunctious. So I apologize.
Well, hey, as we wrap this up here,
Kevin. I just wanted to say that one of the reasons why I asked that question is because I am looking forward to seeing you there.
Oh, you're going to be there? Great. Mm-hmm. Who am I speaking to right now?
Norman.
Okay, great moment. It would be nice to see you in person.
See you there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I speaking about Adrian, he's been busy with this sword experience. I think it'd be great if you crashed one of those. Crashed one of those events.
Oh, I was so bad with this. I'm not a good fighter. I mean, I gave it my best, but I wasn't trained that well, and I didn't have a lot of time doing it. But he's the real deal, and he knows his stuff, and I love his website, and he and I both have really entrepreneurial spirit. I think it's going to do really well for him. I'm very proud of him for the whole thing. I can't wait to see what he comes up with.
Well, Elizabeth, we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being part of this show, and we want to remind all the listeners to please go out and get your book, Shalili. And we are honored to have you here, and we want to thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on it, and I wish you the best of luck with the podcast. I think it's fantastic, and I know the Highlander fans will love it, and thank you so much.
Kyle, do you have any last things you'd like to say?
Again, just, I echo with Kevin, I can't thank you enough for being here, and it's our honor to also be able to promote your book to the fans who listen here, and you are welcome back anytime for anything you do, for any projects you would like to present to the fans. We'll always be here for an outlet for you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That's terrific.
Norman, I know you'd like to say goodbye.
Well, I should say see you later, but...
Yeah, that's right.
I should say see you later.
Elizabeth, again, thank you for coming on the show. We just wanted to make sure that everyone out there that is listening has the ability to just stay in touch with all of your projects. Are you on social media? Are you on Twitter? We know you have Facebook presence with Flapper Press and Flapper Films. So I just wanted to give you one more chance to be able to say, this is where you can find what I'm doing and make sure that the fans can stay connected with you.
Oh, great. Yes, definitely those websites, flapperfilms.com, flapperpress.com. I'm on Twitter at Flapper Press and at Flapper Films. Instagram is the Shalili and Flapper Films. That's about it. I'm all over the place. Please please come and buy my book. It's on Amazon.com and everywhere else you could buy an ebook or a printed book. Buy the Shillelagh, please.
So it's an ebook publication right now. You can find that on Amazon. And then print will be ready by when?
I'm thinking in a couple of weeks. They said 10 to 20 days. I'm hoping I will have it by the event next weekend. But it'll be out soon, very, very soon.
And the cover illustration is gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely gorgeous.
I love the illustrations. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much again, Elizabeth, for being on here. And again, if you need to promote anything else, you're welcome to be back on the show. And Highlander fans, I hope you've enjoyed this interview with Elizabeth Grayson. Please go check out her book. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Fandom Podcast Network featuring Highlander Fandom Flashback. Well, there you have it, Highlander fans. Elizabeth Grayson. What a wonderful interview. Oh, she was so sweet. Man, it's really great to see a performer like her evolve and try new avenues and express the creativity that she may not have been able to do during the run as Amanda on the Highlander TV series. Kyle, what do you think, man? How you feeling?
There's a high right now, that's for certain. A lot of information that I didn't know. I found one of the things that, I mean, she's so creative and she's so talented, but to hear she actually has the permission and the go-ahead at any time to write a Raven book, that's that's mind-blowing to me. That we could be sitting there and at some point we could have more tales of Amanda coming out from Amanda herself.
It's interesting. She said that she had the rights for that, and I think that's wonderful. But, you know, it'd be curious. I'm curious to see what other work that she's going to do. And I'm really excited for her and also excited for us being able to share this with her. Norm, how you feeling, man?
You know, it's such a great experience to be able to talk to somebody that you've been, you know, admiring from a distance as an actress and then as a character that you've loved for all this time. And I've been watching Highlander, the series, ever since it came out in 1992. And she came in the back half of the series in the Paris production with Lady and the Tiger, as we talked about. And I really wanted to ask her those questions about Jason Isaacs because I love watching Jason Isaacs act, and I really needed to know if that was just him or if it was an acting.
Well, the Highlander fans will appreciate that.
Yeah, because I loved her. I loved her appearance, her debut. She came on with just this fierceness, and I think she was the Tiger, actually, in that episode. But, no, it was great. It was special, and I can't thank her enough. I know we thank her profusely on the air, off the air, and in all of our contact with her, but it's really special that somebody, a celebrity like her, who has been able to do all of these great parts of her career and share that with us, is just, it's special for us who love promoting this type of work amongst all of our fans, and just to try and grow the listener base here with being able to treat them with something like this, because, you know, she is a celebrity actress. And now she's moving on to this different phase of her career, and now she's going to become a celebrity writer. And I think that's fantastic for her. I wish her all the best in the world. I know we all do. And it's just going to be really neat to see her move into this next phase and just explore her creativity. And the one thing I also love is that she's becoming just this really great advocate for young women, the way that she had that idea of spinning off the Highlander to a mentor role with Amanda to another younger female immortal who could take the lead. I think that's fantastic. What a great idea. I think it's a great way to bring back Highlander, make it modern, make it fresh, make it representational. And I would love to see that happen in book form, in audio form, what have you. It's time to see new stories. And I think that she really hit on something there.
Oh, well said. Yeah. I liked hearing her excitement in her voice, and that she's, now, I like the fact that she said that she wanted to be in control, and you know, because she has a direction of where she wants to go and what she wants to do, and I love that about her. I think that's great. Now, Norman, I think it's time that we let our listeners know about a special announcement that we have, and I know I brought this up before, but for those of you that haven't heard, I approached you last year around this time about doing a show about Highlander, whether it was just kind of doing one episode or doing something, and it wasn't right at the time. You were busy doing your thing, and but the suns and moons have aligned.
That's the source. Don't bring that up.
The source. No. I am proud to say, and of course, with Kyle here as part of us as co-founders of the Fandom Podcast Network, I'm proud to announce that Norman and I will be co-hosting a brand new podcast, a Highlander podcast called Blood of Kings. Norm, you came up with this idea of the name. First of all, I want to say that I'm proud to do this with you. I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, give a little history on the name.
Well, Blood of Kings is a phrase that was taken from probably one of the most iconic pieces of music in Highlander. That was Princes of the Universe. You know, I am immortal. I have inside me blood of kings. What I love about the connotation of those words is that it just brings you all the way back to like ancient Greece, Mesopotamia, Babylon. You know, these millennia old empires where immortals like Kronos and Mythos and the Four Horsemen, Caspian and Silas, they were roaming the world at this time, when the world was young and it was violent and it was brutal, and it has just basically evolved through history and filtered its history down to these moments that we can talk about now. I love what that means, and I think it's a very easy way to have our listeners understand the content of the mission behind the podcast. And if you indulge me here, Kevin, we actually talked about what we wanted to do for this show.
Oh, please do. Get into that, yes.
So Blood of Kings is going to be a podcast, and the purpose of it is to explore the Highlander fandom, one movie or one episode or one novel, one game, one aspect of the Highlander universe at a time, with this particular axiom to it. And it's going to be, does this further the story and the emotional content of what it means to be immortal? Case in point, if we took a look at an episode, say Run for Your Life, which is one of my all-time favorite episodes starring Carl Robinson. Mac literally says to Carl, you have the opportunity, because you're immortal, to reinvent yourself and to make your dreams come true. This is something that mortals don't have. Make the most of it. Don't throw it away. So when we analyze Highlander and we look at the different properties, what parts of the fandom push that narrative forward, and what do some not necessarily meet that mark? So it's going to be really interesting to see that, because we do have six seasons of the original series. We have the season of The Raven. We have 9+ novels, a bunch of fiction and films in between. There's a lot to cover, but we have the time. So we might as well make that time now.
Perfect. Well said. Before I get into the contact information regarding Blood of Kings, I wanted to just... elaborate on something you said there. You know, I've said earlier on, and I'm going to say it again, one of the reasons why we are doing this is because, and we've talked to our couple of guests about this, there seems to be this kind of, well, let's call it this immortal buzz, that the fandom is kind of either coming back or we're getting new fans. My mission statement, if anything, is I want to bring Highlander to the forefront of fandom again. And there's a built-in audience already, and I think we can reach new members. And I really want to make sure that that is one of the directions that we plan on doing with this podcast. And Kyle, I wanted to ask you, I want to say thank you for helping us with this. And we're looking forward to, you know, having you be a part of this as well as the man behind the scenes. I know how much work you put into editing these shows and getting them up. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Please, first of all, thank you. And
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Lay it down for us, man.
Well, first of all, again, this fandom flashback has been amazing, and we've had a cherry on top with having Elizabeth here, but what's spinning out of it with what you guys are doing with Blood of Kings is absolutely amazing. And it's my honor right now to announce that, yes, Blood of Kings home will be here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And not just that, when we started this fandom flashback, Kevin was insistent. I have a friend that he is the encyclopedia of Highlander, and he must be part of this. And it is also at this time I'm just thrilled to announce that Norman is going to be officially a part of the Fandom Podcast Network going forward. You will be hearing him not only on Blood of Kings, but he will be on our other shows and taking part in many of the things we have planned here. And Norman, it's just an honor to have you here, and I can't thank you enough for what you've contributed and what I know you are going to be contributing.
It's my pleasure to be here. It really is. You know, as fans of so many different types of genres, it's really good to have a home to be able to talk about it comfortably and safely, and just hopefully inspire other people to listen and talk about it and just get in touch with us and just perpetuate that fandom. it's almost kind of like a self-sustaining engine if you do it right, because you draw in fans. They want to talk about stuff you love. They're going to bring you ideas. You talk about that on the air. You interact with email and texting and Twitter and Facebook. That's what we do. That's what we want to find in other people. You know, because for the longest time, sometimes, you know, even before social media, it was really hard to find really good fan communities, communities that were welcoming and accepting and not exclusive or inclusive in any way. We want to just be able to promote fandom. We want to be able to promote what you love. So let us know. Highlander is what I love. And I just kind of wedged myself in and abused the good graces of these two fine gentlemen here on the show. You know, but it really is. It's my great pleasure to be here. And I love working with these two guys so much because they have their hearts are in the right place. And there's a lot of fandom to cover. That's the great thing about this. It doesn't end. It ends when we want it to end, and we don't want it to end. So let's keep this ball rolling.
Well said. Now, I want to let our fans know, that if you don't know already, that we have a Blood of Kings Facebook page, Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom play. Please go check this out. We've got a great group right now. Norm, where are we up to on that right now? How many do we have?
We hit 202, I think, today.
Oh, that's awesome.
So thank you, everyone. 200. That's a milestone for us, because I think when we started this whole thing, we were like around like 20, 30.
Yeah, it was only like about a couple months ago too, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there are a lot of fans in there that have helped us along the way, and there are a lot of people that are really passionate about it that have invited us to other groups that we can share all of our links and all of our fandom with. So thank you to all of the people that are on Blood of Kings.
Yes, again, thank you.
It's one of those things where social media is such a great tool for us to use to be able to spread this, because you can reach so many people and so many people can find you just as quickly. So thanks to everyone who's helping us build all of this momentum, and not just for, you know, the fandom flashbacks, but for all the podcasts you're starting to listen to on the Fandom Podcast Network, like Culture Clash, and all the programming that is being provided, and we will provide even more. So this is for you. This interview that we just did is for you as much as it is for us.
Well said. Now, if you want to get a hold of us for the Blood of Kings podcast, you can reach us by email at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. And we're on Twitter at Blood of Kings Pod. So please follow us. Please share and let us know what you think. And, you know, if you also have ideas for a show regarding Highlander, please throw that at us as well. You know, we're not set to a schedule. There's so much to explore with Highlander that's beyond the movies and the TV show. And we may want to highlight some of our fans eventually, because that's what the Fandom Podcast Network is about. So, yeah, please join us. Please welcome. And also at the Kyle, why don't you tell us how they can get a hold of us on the Fandom Podcast Network? I know our Twitter's fan pod network. And what's our email?
Our email is fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page, Fandom Podcast Network, as well as a group. And Kevin, I just got to add in, when I came to you about 6 months ago now, With this idea, do you think we'd be here already interviewing Elizabeth?
Not at all. But it's amazing. If you put some hard work into something and you're passionate about it, things fall together. And I thank you guys for your help with the promotion of all of this and just your love of all things fandom. So thank you guys. Well, anyway, thank you guys for listening. We are very proud to bring this show to you. Please. And thank you again for staying with us for this Highlander fandom flashback. This has been a wonderful experience. We hope you enjoyed it. And please stay tuned for the Blood of Kings podcast coming very shortly. And please check out our other shows. Kyle and I host a biweekly show called Culture Clash. We have some other specials out there as well. We just did a special on Civil War, Captain America Civil War. And that's one of the things that we do when there's a big movie coming out. Or, you know, we also had a reaction show to the Rebel season finale. Something that's big in pop culture and in fandom, we will more than likely get on board and do a special show about that. And we're also going to be doing some more artist spotlights as well. Have fun listening to us, and thank you for your support.
Yep, absolutely. Kevin, I think there is one more thing before we close out. You think it's time to tease what, now that we've wrapped up Highlander and it's been an amazing experience, you think we should tease what we possibly have coming up for the next Fandom Flashback?
Yes, please do. I'm excited about this.
Dun, 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 dun. Well, you know, the guys kind of took over for this Phantom Flashback with their love of Highlander. I'm a huge Highlander fan too, but you know, these guys are experts compared to me. But coming around next, we're lining up something that's right in so extremely near and dear to my heart, and I know it has a spot with Kevin and Norman as well, but we are going to be bringing you Phantom Flashback Robotech. And I am immensely excited for this. I don't know about you guys, and I know I'm probably a bigger anime fan, I know, than Kevin, but Robotech was one of the shows that brought me into anime. And I am truly excited to be able to go back and relive this series and talk about its very interesting history here in the United States.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It was my first anime along with Akira. And I got into the TV show, and the original TV show, was it Robotech, Macross Saga, Masters, and Next Generation. And then I was collecting the comic books that were coming out. But I know there was so much more, so I'm really excited about this because I know I'm going to learn a lot from you guys about this.
I love how you said Robotech, Kyle, because there was so much love behind when you said that. Like, this is how much I love this in one word. Boom! Robotech. Like, wow. I love it.
I cannot wait, and the preliminary work on that is getting started now, and I would say probably about mid-June we might be seeing our first episode of that Phantom Flashback. But again, I gotta close out for you guys by just saying you've made this Highlander Phantom Flashback amazing. It's taken us to another level, and you guys put in so much work on this, and it accomplished even, I think, beyond what we even thought we were going to accomplish. And all the credit in the world to both you and Norman and Kevin, because you guys put in the work and you put in the heart into this.
Thanks so much, my friend. Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Hey, there's three of us. Does this mean that actually we can actually run our own pinpoint barrier system?
Exactly.
Nice. I love that.
We all get cyclones at the end of the next flashback.
Yes.
Well, I think we should end it, guys. Again, thank you so much for sharing this Highlander fandom flashback. Again, thank you to the listeners and everyone on the Blood Kings page. Until next time, this is Kevin.
This is Kyle.
And this is Norm.
Thank you very much. And hey, there can be only three.
The Three Horsemen of the Apocalypse doesn't have the same ring to it. No, it doesn't.
It does not. Thank you so much, everyone, and stay tuned for more.